Hello and welcome to More Than a Grad. This is the little mini series of Get Your Shit Together Week, and really the week is about just working out what it is you want to do next and working out all those routes that you can take after graduation. It's questions that I wish I'd asked while I was a student but was too shy to, and I just really hope it helps you guys out in working out how to get your shit together when it comes to careers and moving on from university. So in this conversation, I talked to Daniel, and Daniel did feature in the Getting a Job episode. If you haven't checked that out, you definitely should. But this is really about retraining and masters and kind of what further education looks like, what it looks like to go back into education, all of those kind of options. So often what happens in university is you realise that in order to get the job that you want, you need, you know, a master's degree, or potentially you took a degree and at the time you thought that was what you wanted to do. And after 3 years and after the degree, you realise actually this isn't the job I want to be in and you have to go back to university. So Daniel really helps us explore this topic. He gives some really helpful advice about when to apply, what to look out for. He talks to us about when it's too late to retrain, which, spoiler, it's never. And he just, I think, really uplifts people's spirits in this and talking about all the different higher education. It's not just masters, all the different higher education kind of qualifications you can get and all the different pathways you can take in terms of higher education and retraining after your degree. So I won't waffle on anymore, but we'll just get stuck in. Hope you enjoy the episode. Hello and welcome to More Than a Grad. This is the Get Your Shit Together week, and today we're talking about retraining and doing masters with Daniel. So Daniel, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, thanks Rachel. Yeah, and hi everyone. So my name's Daniel. I'm one of the careers consultants in the team at the University of Reading. And yeah, really looking forward to talking a little bit about masters today. So in my role, generally I work with literature and languages students, but also got a bit of a finalist remit. So it means that, you know, I'm very in tune with kind of what the career paths are after graduation. And you know, that might be, you know, graduate work options, or it might be in this kind of instance, you know, thinking about masters and further study and postgraduate stuff and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to jump in with the questions. So the first one is that there are so many options and acronyms. And we should chat just before we start recording about this. But could you talk me through them and kind of where students start?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a minefield, isn't it, when you see all these different you know, acronyms and things like that. So I'll try and get it across in the easiest way I think that I probably can. And to me, they really group into kind of three main areas. So you've got your kind of standard or, you know, taught masters, if you like. So you've got your MA, your MSc, your LLM, and all that means is a Master of Art, Master of Science, you know, law masters type thing. So those are the kind of the taught based masters. We then got, you know, the second group, which is probably more like a research based masters. So we've got like MRes, we've got MPhil. And the difference between those two is the first one's probably more of a taught based route. The second one's probably more research based. So probably the project, you know, more credits for the project or the dissertation type thing that you're going to be doing. The final group, you know, more like the professional or kind of vocational qualifications. Probably the most familiar one in this category for people would be the PGCE, so the Postgraduate Certificate of Education. So it's specific to a discipline. I mean, there are a few more, you know, just to, and another one is the GDL, so the law conversion and things like that. So I think in terms of navigating that, they're the three categories really that we're looking at. I think there's a little bit of, again, we could go down another direction here, because that's like, you know, your standard masters, if you like. There's, I suppose, also a PG cert, so postgraduate certificate. And we've also got a postgraduate diploma as well. So the master's would be the full course, the 180 credits, if you like. Similarly, you know, to how there's certain credits make up an undergraduate year. The postgraduate certificate is 60 credits of a master's course. And then the diploma is 120 credits of that. And normally what you see between the diploma and the master's is, you know, some kind of dissertation or something that would be your last kind of 60 credits. So hopefully that gives a nice kind of overview about, you know, the differences between some of them. And again, if you're not sure, it's always worth checking, because each institution, you know, may be slightly different, so it's always worth checking. You said at the end there, you know, where do students start with this? So I think in terms of, you know, the acronyms, that might be where to start. I think if you're thinking of masters generally, you know, well, have a think about the eligibility, you know, criteria of the kind of courses that you see. Again, it's an academic course, so there might be, you know, requirement to have a 2-1 or a 2-2 or something like that. And again, for me, the question you should be asking yourself is, are you enjoying your study, you know, at the moment? Are you kind of getting something out of doing your dissertation or your final year project? And maybe the most important one, you know, are you ready to commit to another year of further study?
Amazing. Yeah, no, it's an interesting one because my sister decided to go and do a master's actually. And she did modern languages, French and Spanish, and then now she's going on to do speech therapy. Mm-hmm. And I just wondered, like, I haven't really heard of that many people doing a master's quite different to what their degree course is like. So where is the kind of, I guess, how wide is the scope in terms of what you can do for masters if it's different to what you did at undergrad?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, a great example. Again, not too dissimilar to me, how, you know, normally working with languages students. But yeah, there are some of these conversion courses that are out there. And normally, as I said, you know, there's going to be some eligibility, you know, criteria. So, you know, a couple of ones that we've already mentioned, you know, you mentioned speech and language therapy. And again, this one in particular, you know, the places are quite competitive because it relies on there being X number of speech and language therapists, you know, in work. There are other things, you know, like the law conversion course I mentioned, the GDL. So again, generally, if you it comes back to your academic experience, the kind of, you know, professional work experience that you have. But if you've kind of followed, you know, an interest in law, let's say, then again, that might be a possibility, you know, kind of applying for that course. We talked about the PGCE in education. Again, I think as long as you can kind of show that, you know, the right skills, the right interests, you know, the kind of passion or dedication for a particular topic, then, you know, is open in some places. I think, you know, there will also be examples where that isn't quite possible. But, you know, there is quite a lot of these kind of conversion type courses out there where you can, you know, I suppose they're there designed for if you haven't kind of got the training from your undergraduate degree. Again, I think it does come back to thinking about what's transferable. So again, have you done a module, for example, that maybe has touched on law or education in your undergraduate degree? Have you got any work experience, volunteering, you know, that kind of thing? That's what I'd be thinking about if you're thinking about that kind of conversion course.
That makes a lot of sense. I've got two follow-up questions, they're quite different ones. But the first one was really about, you mentioned about kind of the diplomas earlier, and like, what is the benefit of kind of doing a diploma over a master's? Like, is there, apart from the dissertation, of course, which I mean, everyone loves, but...
yeah, good question. And I mean, to be honest, it might just be what, you know, is kind of common in your sector, because I think this is the difference. Employers in different sectors will expect different things. So again, I'm going to use the education one, for example. You know, the certificate, the postgraduate certificate of education, that's the most recognized qualification to become a teacher. And you don't necessarily need the postgraduate diploma of education or a master's in education to actually progress to the next step. So I think it just comes back to, you know, what's common in your sector. And again, it might be that you're kind of checking in with us in careers. It might be that you're talking to people in the sector. It may even say in the job description, you know, that you're looking at, you know, requires this kind of level of qualification. So there isn't necessarily, you know, a preference, if you like, you know, that one is better than the other. I mean, you could say that the 180 credits, you get to say that you've got your full master's, but if it's not needed, you know, in your profession, you could think about maybe doing something slightly differently.
Okay, brilliant. And then the other question that I had was about the PGCEs. If you're like, in my head, the only people who would do that are people who did kind of like maths, English, science. Is that true? Or is it across basically every degree that you could probably do a PGCE?
Yeah, I mean, generally it's across every, you know, department. And the reason for that is because, you know, if you think back to when you're doing GCSEs and A levels, it's not just maths, English and science teachers that you have, you know, there's languages teachers, you know, right the way through to some kind of, you know, like taking psychology or law at A level or something like that. So yeah, there is a range. Again, I suppose thinking about the requirements, it comes back into have you done students in schools while you've been at Reading, for example? You know, or have you got any experience in that kind of classroom? And again, you know, that those are kinds of things that I'd be thinking about. But yeah, it's not just necessarily limited to those subjects that you mentioned.
Okay, amazing. So what about the mode of study, and does it always have to be full time?
Yeah, good question, because at undergraduate level, you know, I think, you know, I would say the more common routes, if you like, you know, what we see generally is that a lot of people are doing their courses full time. Yes, yeah, some people definitely do it part time. I think it's probably more common at masters and these kind of more postgraduate courses that we've been talking about to offer, I suppose, more flexibility in how you can study. And really, this means that you can kind of gain these qualifications, you know, while managing other commitments. So, you know, you could do it part-time. So if you're doing a master's course, you might do it 2 years instead of the one, for example. So that's fairly common. And normally on websites and things like that, you'll see, you know, the cost or, you know, the kind of outline about 1 year or if you do it 2 years. So I think that's something to have a think about. I suppose a different mode of study, if we're talking about how long you do it, is actually whether you do it, you know, in person, if you like, or on campus, or whether you do it, you know, by distance or online study. So this is definitely something that was around, you know, pre-lockdown and things like that. There was something that existed called distance learning. And I suppose this is another more flexible kind of route. You can do stuff from the comfort of your own home. And I suppose you can balance this, you know, alongside other commitments that you have. You know, you don't physically need to go to the campus in a lot of instances, but you do still get access to an academic tutor. You get your lectures provided. You know, you might be doing coursework instead of kind of sitting exams type thing. So I think, yeah, there generally is more flexibility when it comes to masters.
Amazing. And one thing that kind of springs to mind when you're saying that is kind of when you're talking about kind of having it with other things and, like, you know, having potentially a job and doing a master's kind of on the side. When it comes to, and I'm sure we'll be talking about kind of money in a bit, but do you think that, like, there's scope for kind of employers to pay part of that or employers to kind of get on board with you doing a master's?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's probably common practice. You know, I think, you know, I can't say that every employer is going to be exactly the same, but, you know, there are definitely instances where, you know, maybe employers are going to contribute a little bit to kind of get you professionally qualified. Again, I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about, you know, this later and the idea of maybe some alternatives to master's study and things like that, you know, in the sense of, you know, retraining too. But yeah, I think it's definitely possible. And again, if we look at things like accountancy, quite often they'll have, you know, like exams which might be funded through this kind of thing. So yeah, I think that's definitely a possibility. Yeah, to answer your question.
Amazing, brilliant. And then the next question really is about kind of funding and, you know, what's available in terms of, like, loans and scholarships. Because, you know, masters are more expensive than undergrad.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I can definitely touch on this subject, you know, a little bit in talking about the funding, loans, scholarships available, that kind of thing. And I think, you know, the first thing really just to say is, as you say, the fees do kind of vary, I suppose, greatly. So, you know, there's not necessarily a fixed cost, you know, like it might be with a year of your undergraduate study. From my knowledge, I mean, if we're talking about a taught kind of UK-based master's in the UK for a UK student, we're probably looking at an average around £8,500 for your course, although that probably can go up and down depending on the course. There are higher fees as well if you're thinking about studying internationally. So, you know, if you're a UK student thinking about going abroad or an international student thinking about coming to UK, generally the fees will be higher. A little bit about loans and funding and that kind of thing. I mean, there is a postgraduate study loan in the UK for postgraduate masters. It works much and such, you know, it's the same as the undergraduate loan that a lot of people will already be, you know, familiar with. And that's around £11,000 to cover the cost of that master's. Now, in terms of, you know, loans and scholarships and bursaries and that kind of thing. Now, generally, universities probably have, you know, their own scholarships and bursaries that are available. And, you know, let me give you an example. So at Reading, you know, there's a benefit, I suppose, to keep studying at the university where you've done your undergraduate degree course. So here at Reading, the alumni discount's worth around £1,500. And generally, that's applied to your first year of tuition fees. And again, if we go back to that kind of part-time nature, that will just be £750 over each year of study. And again, that's what it is at the moment. It could change, but again, that's where we are at the moment. So there are these kind of incentives, I suppose, that you know, universities may try to keep, you know, some of their students for postgraduate study. But again, I would say it does depend on university. So go and have a look on their funding pages. Generally, they'll have a page around bursaries and scholarships that people can access quite easily. I suppose there are other ways of funding it. So there might be research councils that are offering, you know, bursaries and scholarships. Sometimes, again, we've talked about it already, coming back to that education, you get government funding, you know, for a certain course. So PGCE is a good example of that, where some courses where they're really in demand, let's say, you know, for needing teachers, you might get some government funding. And again, you know, as I'm sure we can talk about a little bit, you know, at the university, if you are thinking about, I need a little bit more help with my funding, then obviously we've got the student finance support team. And I know in RUSU, you've got your money advisors as well. So I'm sure they can have these kind of conversations too.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that came up in my head when you were speaking there was about scholarships. Mm. What, I mean, I know that you don't work directly with, you know, who gets in and who doesn't get a scholarship, but generally I feel like a lot of people would kind of feel a bit timid about applying for a scholarship. You know, in my kind of school days, applying for a scholarship, you know, at a school, you'd have to be incredibly gifted and, you know, basically be a wonder child. And I just was wondering kind of what you would say about applying for scholarships and, you know, if you think you're good enough, like when do you apply and that kind of thing?
Yeah, again, really good question. And what I would say is, you know, when we're talking about scholarships, you're right. I think even just by the nature of what they're called, you're exactly right. You think, right, you're going to be best in class and things. And I think there are definitely scholarships out there that do exactly that, you know, for the kind of, you've got really great marks, maybe the best mark in your year or whatever, and it allow you to apply. I suppose for anyone that may not feel in that position, you know, generally scholarships and bursaries get grouped together a little bit, you know, in these kind of instances. And there might be support, you know, for particular groups of students, you know, maybe some of those more underrepresented areas that go into master's study. So I think my main bit of advice here is really do go and either have a chat with the university who you're applying for and be upfront, you know, ask the question, what support do you give your postgraduate students for funding? And, you know, even if you don't want to ask them, you know, you don't want to pick up the phone or whatever, go to their website. I'm sure the information will be there. And normally they'll have the eligibility criteria. And, you know, I wouldn't see this as taking money from the university or anything like that. But I would say, you know, if you meet the eligibility criteria, you know, why not apply? You know, yes, there might not be endless amounts of money to give away, you know, by the university. But, you know, it comes back to that phrase, doesn't it? You've got to be in it to win it, if you like, if I can be, you know, so blasé about it. But, you know, if you don't apply, then you'll never know whether you're going to get that funding or not. And it's always better, I suppose, to be, as I said, in it, you know, rather than just all basically thinking, oh, what if I'd applied, you know, for this kind of funding?
Yeah, absolutely. I really agree with that. I really like the idea of just kind of, you know, even just being curious about it and just having a chat and just finding out whether you're eligible or not, like it's worth applying.
It's exactly, you know, if the answer comes back no, well, you've asked the question, you know, and maybe then you can think about, if you're still thinking about the funding issue, having a conversation with those people that can really help you in this kind of area. But yeah, what have you got to lose by asking the question, I would say?
Absolutely. And do you think, because with undergrad, you know, entry requirements are different, depending on the university you go to, is that kind of the same with scholarships across postgrad universities? Like are the entry requirements for a scholarship or kind of eligibility requirements slightly different? So if, for example, I can't get a scholarship at Bristol, maybe in Brighton I could get one.
Yeah, exactly. I would always say check in with the university because it's likely to vary from university to university. Some might offer scholarships for certain courses. Some might offer them, you know, to certain groups of students. So I just think because there's so many universities out there in the UK and there's not, you know, kind of a set pattern of what's offered, always best to check in the first instance.
Amazing. Brilliant. So kind of on the theme of funding and money and generally it's an expensive part of education. Yes. How do you know that your course is a good return on investment?
I think this is always what it comes back to, isn't it? Because, you know, when you let's say the course is £10,000, I think that is an investment, isn't it? You know, that's how you've got to see the kind of course. I think, you know, the first thing that I would say is if you've got a real passion for your subject, you're keen to continue learning, you really want to find out more about it, this is probably a good reason, you know, for actually choosing postgraduate level kind of study. So I think, you know, if you're feeling like that, then that may be enough to kind of convince you to actually invest in that. I think in terms of having a good return on investment, then you probably want to think about a couple more things as well. You know, maybe if we're thinking about the job that you're thinking about in the future itself, you know, is it a requirement, you know, to have the master's level qualification, the diploma, the certificate, whatever it might be? And again, as I kind of said earlier, there will be some sectors, you know, well, there are a lot of sectors and they will all have slightly different expectations. So before you invest, you might want to say, well, do they need a master's? Do they need a diploma? Do they need a certificate? Actually, could you go in with your undergraduate level degree? So that might be a conversation that you want to have. I suppose in terms of the course itself, quite a lot of the courses that we see might have, you know, a placement opportunity where you could actually go and gain some work experience or whatever alongside your course. That might be more appealing, you know, for some students, because as well as getting the academic knowledge alongside your study, you might also get a bit of kind of experience, you know, alongside it as well, which, you know, in the future might be more attractive. And then I think the other thing you might want to have a bit of a think about is, what are the destinations of previous students that have studied that course? Where have they gone on to work? And most importantly, are they in areas that you're interested in? You know, because if, again, if these kind of things start matching up, you can probably say, well, actually, you know, they might be able to put me in contact with those students. You know, they might have good links in the industry. So again, that for me looks like a good return on investment. I think, you know, finally, my one real piece of advice here is to think carefully about whether you need the master's to achieve your next steps or not. And yeah. I think what I mean by this is, what I wouldn't want to see is a student just applying for a postgraduate course to kind of delay their career decision making, if you like. As I said, you know, you really want to think of this as an investment. You don't want to pay for the course, take a year or maybe more if you're doing it part time to complete it, only then to realize that you could have applied to the job that you're interested in with your undergraduate degree. You know, I definitely wouldn't want to see that. And if anyone wants to have these conversations, you know, we're more than happy, you know, to kind of talk through some of these options as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's actually was going to kind of answer the question that I was going to ask next about, is there like not right reasons to go for masters? And I have seen firsthand people being like, I don't really like, I wasn't really sure. I was kind of enjoying the uni lifestyle. And I've always been like, is that the best reason to carry on studying?
Yeah. And I think you're right. You know, it comes back to what I said at the beginning, you know, if you're really passionate about your subject, you know, and you want to find out more, that might be enough, you know, to kind of say, actually, I do want to kind of go on and continue learning. But maybe if you're not enjoying your study, maybe you enjoyed the modules rather than the dissertation, you know, you might want to start kind of having a few questions about what it is. I mean, you know, if you didn't enjoy the dissertation, and again, I'm not advocating one way or the other, but maybe something like a postgraduate certificate or the diploma, where you don't necessarily have to do that dissertation, might be more attractive, you know, to some students. But yeah, I think the big thing for me here is that we really don't want to see kind of students saying, oh, I'm going to do a master's because I'm not quite sure what it is that I want to do. You know, I don't think that necessarily fulfills the reasons, if you like, for doing a master's. I think it's much, although it might be scary, you know, and I definitely can appreciate that, it might be better to have those more difficult conversations now about what it is that you might be interested in after university, rather than spending X amount of £1,000 going out for a year and doing the course and then having those same conversations.
Yeah. Something I was going to kind of come back to is, you know, we're living in a time right now where the job market is pretty hard and competitive. And I am seeing a lot of friends and people who just did a master's because they kind of didn't want to get into that and like they found it so hard. As I was saying before the podcast began, kind of like I've heard that kind of master's applications have been up quite a lot. What would you say, give the kind of same advice right now in terms of COVID? Because I know that a lot of people are thinking, well, I'm struggling to find a job, why not do further education?
Yeah, I mean, I think the advice really still applies, like I just said. You know, yes, obviously with the current climate, it may be a little bit more tricky, you know, there might be less opportunities available. But again, I think it really comes back to, at the end of the day, it's still the same thing. You're spending X thousands of pounds, you know, say a whole year. And I suppose, you know, the question is there anything else that you could be doing in that year? You know, maybe earning money rather than spending it, if you like, you know, that could make you, you know, more employable, if you like. But again, you know, there are, you know, we talked in a previous podcast, you know, around graduate schemes, graduate jobs. There might be opportunities for like graduate internships, volunteering. You know, there might be ways of kind of gaining some experience, even in, you know, even in the current climate. And again, if students really are feeling like this, as I said, we're always happy to have these conversations. And I have been having these exact conversations with students that, you know, maybe are not quite finding what it is that they want to do at the moment, and therefore probably leaning in towards that master's thing. I would just say, think about the questions that we thought about today. And yeah, it as I said, it can be daunting to think about the next steps and things like that, but it's probably better to have those conversations sooner rather than later.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think kind of like I've been doing a lot of kind of like digging around on the internet recently around like other courses, like smaller ones. Do you think those, you know, are a good way? Because, you know, £8,000 is a lot of money. And I think a lot of people kind of shy away from like the smaller online courses and things because, you know, like in their head, it does cost money, but because you have to kind of hand your credit card over at the end, whereas a master's, you don't really see the money. Do you think that those are like just kind of almost worthwhile if you aren't completely sure what you want to do, like those, using those kind of courses is a better way to go than just going into further education to a master's?
Yeah, I think, you know, one thing to say is we've seen a massive increase in the interest of doing online courses, right? And generally that's because, you know, where we are at the moment, you know, people are thinking about what they can do and things like that. So yeah, you mentioned that, you know, there are some sites where you have to pay, but again, if you're thinking about doing a master's in a certain area, you may want to do a bit of a test and say, oh yeah, I'll spend £40-50 on this course or something like that, and see if it's, you know, I'm kind of interested, I suppose, in that area. You could look at it in a different way and say, you know, well, actually, I only really want to kind of focus on this skill or this topic. So, you know, I'm not necessarily it's going to be a substitute, but, you know, there might be other reasons for doing the course. Probably a good time to say that university students do actually get free access to LinkedIn Learning and things like that. And, you know, if you just Google University of Reading LinkedIn Learning, there's some steps about how you can set up your account. And, you know, they've got loads and loads of different online courses that you could check out, you know, on their site. So I think it's probably worth saying that as well. I don't think, you know, it could be a substitute for master's, you know, course. But again, as I said, it might be a good way to test out, you know, what kind of some of these topics is like. If you're thinking about distance learning, again, might be good to see what it's like to do something, you know, online and things like that. I suppose, you know, people are thinking about doing online courses, and like you said, they're worried about giving their credit card over and things like that. Well, you know, again, could it come back to, is there a professional body, you know, for this organization? Are they kind of promoting any particular online courses? Are you going to get a certificate, you know, as a result of doing the online course, you know, that you can then add to your LinkedIn profile or post on your CV or something like that? So again, I would be really looking for some of those tangible benefits that you might be able to take away.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so kicking myself right now for not knowing about LinkedIn Learning when I was a graduate, when I was a student. That's very frustrating. But yeah, as you say, like I've been looking at these courses and I feel like they might be the best way to go if you feel like, I could definitely develop my skills in this area. So for example, I did marketing. Mm-hmm. I could definitely develop my skills in SEO. Do I need to do a master's a whole year's worth to do that? I don't think so. And in a way, like those shorter courses can give you much more kind of practical skills. Whereas I feel like the master's almost gives you a much more kind of like, you know, it's analytical thinking and like research and that kind of thing as well.
Yeah, it's going to give you, you know, broader academic knowledge. And I suppose the other way that we could be looking at this is, you know, and this is why I said maybe sometimes about having those more difficult conversations first, because if you've got an idea or a sense about the kind of jobs that you're interested in, well, there's probably a job being advertised at the moment, you know, and or a couple of jobs in that area. You know, if we forget about location and, you know, being the perfect role that you want to apply for, well, we could have a look at those, you know, job descriptions, and it's probably going to tell you, you know, you need a master's in this field, you need a postgraduate diploma, actually we just want someone that studied an undergraduate degree. So that's why I kind of, you know, hinted or said, you know, towards having those difficult conversations, because you might be able to then go and have a look at the job description. And let's say you see five that all say you need a master's level qualification to do this job. That then might be the time to think, hang on a minute, I might need to start thinking about doing a master's here.
Absolutely, absolutely. So are there any alternatives to master studies? We kind of briefly touched on the online courses there, but are there any alternatives? And again, you did mention also the kind of diploma, but yeah, are there any alternatives to master studies that students could also consider?
Yeah, definitely. So I think, you know, we've picked up on a few of these, and, you know, that third category, as I said, you know, around these kind of conversion courses, when we talked about that, and those more kind of professional vocational courses. So I suppose these are kind of intensive programs that allow individuals to pursue a certain career, you know, from their undergraduate degree. We talked about law, we talked about education, speech and language therapy, social work, you know, those kind of things. So, you know, that might be some people might consider that as an alternative because it might be so different or a little bit different from an undergraduate degree. I think we also talked about, you know, that kind of professional qualification that you might be able to get in the job. So there's definitely some alternatives around, you know, that might come with, you know, your graduate job or your graduate scheme. You know, that could be certain training on the job. It could be a professional qualification. It could even be, you know, a master's, or, you know, if you've heard of the ILM, you know, the leadership and management qualification. So again, you know, there might be options there around kind of different alternatives to master study that people might be interested in. I mentioned, you know, that professional qualification, and again, accountancy being quite a good, you know, example of that. But again, I think there's, you know, marketing, you mentioned there might be some training in the job with the Chartered Institute of Marketing. And again, HR is another one, you know, that might be a little bit more kind of training on the job. There is one other kind of alternative that's a little bit, you know, I suppose like a master's, but a little bit not as well, if that makes sense. And that's with like the professional trade, the Knowledge Transfer Partnership. And this is kind of like a research project that you'd be working alongside an employer with. So again, you get that kind of the elements of research that you might get, you know, from more research-based masters, but you're working with an employer rather than, you know, an academic institution.
Amazing. That sounds really good, actually. So when should students apply for masters?
Yeah. Again, this is the old age question, isn't it? And one that I answer all the time. So what I'd say here is that generally courses would open from September of the year before you're going to kind of start your study. Now, if it's a more competitive course or course, you know, a course with fewer places, then these are going to tend to fill up a little bit quicker. Okay. So my advice is, maybe, you know, even before kind of December, January time, that might be when they're kind of shutting, you know, or full of application. So again, it always comes back to every course is going to be different, but it's worth having those conversations early just to say, when do your courses normally finish? You open right the way through, because, you know, there will be some courses that are open till July, August kind of time. And definitely last year I was working with some students in June, July, August that were kind of, you know, now thinking, do you know what? I am going to apply for a master's. You know, and there was only a couple of months in between when they'd start in September. But I think it's always best to check with the institution. Some of them might have a deadline. You know, some of them might say it's open a little bit longer. So yeah, always check. I think there are a few advantages to applying early. One, it's out the way. So, you know, you might get your response quicker, you know, so if you apply in December, you might already know by January, February, you know, where we are at the moment, that you've got a place, you know, for postgraduate study coming up. The other thing I would say is if you do apply earlier, again, another advantage is we talked about this already, but, you know, if you're applying for funding alongside that, you know, exactly the same as you do undergraduate, you might have to do a little bit of kind of applying for funding. And again, you've probably got more time to think about bursary scholarships. There may be deadlines to apply for some of these bursaries and scholarships as well. So again, if you're pushing it right to the end, you may have missed out, you know, on some of these opportunities. And something we haven't talked about, you know, and will be of concern to some, you know, is about accommodation as well. You know, if you're applying later, there's going to be less choices, I guess, you know, in terms of the accommodation that you've got to think about. So I think there are some definite, you know, benefits here to applying early. But having said that, you know, some courses will accept people, you know, right up until the end. So yeah, as I said, always best to check, I think, in terms of when to apply.
That's really useful to know. And it's kind of nice to know in terms of, like, even if you're thinking about it, potentially applying, you know, then you know that you've got a place and it's done. Like, I've always been one of the people, like, I remember when I was applying for undergrad, who wanted to get the application in really, really early, just so that, like, I could get here back as soon as I possibly could. Mm. So is there, like, a set process that just mentioned about your kind of UCAS and stuff?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Is there a set process for applying for a master's, or is it very, very different to undergrad?
Yeah, again, a good question, and something, again, that comes up time and time again. I think there's almost a common myth, you know, because of how you apply for undergraduate study, like you said, and you've already mentioned UCAS. So really, the majority of courses for postgraduate study, you won't have to apply through UCAS, unlike when it's undergraduate study. Universities tend to manage this themselves, and they'll have their own application system about how you're going to apply. So again, I'll use Reading as the example. You know, you apply using the RICIS portal, which I'm sure, you know, a lot of students are already familiar with. Again, UCAS is still around for some courses. So we've talked about teaching a lot. So again, that is something that's still managed in, you know, using the UCAS system. So yeah, I would say, again, it is a case sometimes of going to the institution and seeing how they do things. But I would say, you know, there is almost a typical application. If you asked if there was a set process of how you'd apply for a master's, there are a lot of commonalities, I suppose, between the universities of what they're going to ask for. So there'll tend to be, you know, an application form online that you need to fill in where you're going to kind of, you know, include some of your personal details. They're going to ask you probably to upload a CV, what it's like, you know, how you meet some of that kind of academic, you know, kind of criteria. You know, if you think back to when you applied, you know, for undergraduate, you're definitely still going to have to write that personal statement, although there's a few differences with this personal statement, which I'm sure we'll come on to talk about. And again, it will be things like providing some references, you know, to confirm, you know, that you've got the right kind of criteria or suitability to do the course. And quite a lot often, you know, they'll ask you to upload a transcript of the modules and grades that you received while you've done your undergraduate study, which is something, again, you can download from the RICIS portal. Again, I think that's, you know, quite generally speaking, some courses will be different. You know, so for example, if it's a more creative course, they might require a portfolio or something like that. And again, in some instances, for some courses, they might invite you to interview, you know, after you've submitted your kind of application. But again, you know, I think this is a really good question to ask at things like open days and visit days, which again are still taking place. They're just a bit more virtual at the moment. And again, ask them for top tips about what you're going to face in the process. And I'm sure they get asked this a lot. So yeah, that would be my, you know, top tip to think about, you know, trying to get some advice from them at kind of events like this.
Absolutely. One thing that kind of like I want to ask about, and we haven't touched on that much, is about retraining, because obviously retraining a master's can be quite different. You know, retraining often happens when you've gone into a job, realise you really don't like the industry and you want to start over. I think it's a very kind of nerve-wracking thing to, I can imagine it'd be a very nerve-wracking thing to do, to be in one sector and then go, this isn't what I want to do at all. I just wanted to like ask about the process of that. And also, you know, does that mean that you have to apply straight to, so I'll do an example. Let's say someone was in the marketing sector and then they realized, I don't want to do this. I want to be, I don't know, a nurse. Kind of what that looks like in terms of, can you just apply for an undergrad? Do you have to go and do something else? What are your options there?
Yeah, it's a good question, I think, because, you know, everything's going to be different. So the example you gave, you know, marketing to being a nurse or whatever, you know, that's going to be different to if you're doing law and you want to go and do, I don't know, maths or something, you know, an accountant or something like that. So I think, you know, the kind of common things that underpin this is, you know, what's the reason for the change, I suppose, and just being really clear about why, you know, maybe you're not enjoying, as you said, what you're doing, or you think it's just the right time to be thinking about a change. Maybe there's been some personal circumstances that have just wanting you to kind of think about reevaluating what you're doing at the moment. I think for me, the first thing to do is look at what options that you have. And it is almost a case of what I said before about working backwards. What job is it you're interested in doing now? What are the kind of, you know, what is the criteria on the job description? If it's a case of it saying, we take, you know, this particular undergraduate degree, or you just need to have a degree. Sometimes it says, you know, I'm sure you've seen it, where we were looking for this specific thing or relevant experience in this area. So again, I think it's just a matter of going back and thinking about what is it that you want to do now, and almost working backwards. If it says on there that you need to do a master's in, you know, X, then it's kind of taking a step back and saying, okay, well, how do I get onto that master's course? You go to the master's course and you say, right, what's the criteria for getting onto the master's course? And if the master's course is saying you need to do an undergraduate degree in nursing, you know, as you said, for example, that might mean that you have to start, you know, back from the undergraduate degree. what I would say is it's always worth talking to people. I know sometimes it sounds scary to pick up the phone, but you know, you don't want to just think, well, I'm moving from marketing to nursing straight away, so that must mean that I have to go right back to the beginning. You know, is it worth a phone call at that middle step? You know, is it worth a phone call to an employer? I mean, in this particular example, I would imagine you probably got to go back, you know, to your undergraduate degree. But there will be other examples. And I'm sure when people listen to this, you know, they'll be thinking in their head about maybe their own kind of examples. But I think, again, it's just, as I said, worth working backwards, because you don't want to go right back to the beginning if you don't necessarily have to.
Definitely. Yeah, no, I don't think there's any transferable skills between, well, in terms of soft skills, definitely. But in terms of the actual practical stuff, I don't think I could.
I would always say you never know what's transferable until you start having to think about it.
Very true. Very true. So I guess, yeah, both of these will apply, like include applications. Mm. Applications, they both, if it's undergrad or master's, require a personal statement. So if we talk through the master's personal statement first and then just talk a little bit about if you're retraining, maybe you should include in a personal statement, because obviously it's going to look a bit strange that, you know, you went out for 5 years and you've come back to uni. But yeah, let's go through the master's personal statement first.
Yeah. Okay. So top tips on writing a personal statement for master's. I think, yeah, again, this is something I help students with all the time. And even this year, I've probably read in excess of about 50 to 100, you know, personal statements. Generally, I try to encourage students to think around four key questions on their personal statement. And I'll try and go through each one of these. The first one, and arguably the most important one, is why are you the best candidate to receive a place on this course? Okay, and this is going to run throughout your whole personal statement. I mean, what I would say here is you're probably looking for at least three examples about why you want to receive, or why you think you're the best candidate. It might come back to the fact that you've done a relevant degree, and so you've already got some kind of knowledge that's transferable, you know, onto the course. It might come back to that you've got some experience, you know, maybe you've got an internship, maybe you've done some relevant work experience already. And again, it might come back to the fact you've got a real interest, you know, and kind of dedication to this particular course that you're applying for. You know, we talked about online courses. It'd be a great opportunity to mention that you've done something around that. Maybe you've been to an open day, you know, and you've already had a conversation with an academic that speaks on the course. You know, again, if it's that you're passionate about the environment and you're going on to, you know, an environmental, you know, course, again, there might be certain volunteering kind of things that you've done. You know, there might be certain commitments that you've done. You might have already made a member of a professional body, you know, for example. So again, it's really outlining why you're the best candidate, I suppose, to receive place on the course. And I think this is important. And the way I would kind of think about it is think about who else might be applying to the course and what you have specifically that other people on the course might not, you know, be applying for and things like that. So that's what I would start with. The second one is really about why are you applying for this course in particular? You know, there's probably, I was going to say hundreds, but it's probably thousands. It might even be tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands, you know, master's courses out there. What is it about this particular course that you're applying for that really makes you want to apply for it? And I think this is where it's a bit different from the undergraduate personal statement. If you cast your mind back, you can apply for kind of four or five different universities, might be different courses at different universities. So you can be more specific, I suppose, in your master's personal statement, because it's for one course. Slightly different if you're going for teaching, because you still get that option of a few different things. But again, you could look over what the crossover points are between those courses. Again, any knowledge that you can show here that you've done, you know, research that you've done and things like that, you know, name drop some modules or say what it is that you like, maybe about studying about these modules, again, I think would be good to include. And again, the third question in a similar kind of way, well, why do you want to study at this particular institution? You know, it's great to say, I want to study at Reading because it's a nice big green campus. But is that really kind of, you know, showing that you've done a little bit of research? And especially if you studied at Reading as well, you know, is there something about the kind of the environment, the community feel that you like? Is it in the same department? Could you talk about the kind of support that you've got from your academics? If it's, you know, a different university, you know, maybe you could have a look at what kind of research the academic is producing. Could you actually contact some of the academics, you know, before you apply to get some pre-reading for the course? Again, all these things are going to kind of show that you are dedicated, you know, to kind of applying for this course. Now, the final one, there's a reason I've left this to last. It's probably because it's one of the more difficult things maybe to kind of think about or communicate. And that is, what are your future career plans? And how can this course help you get there? I think it's probably one of the things that's always missed off maybe when people think about their personal statement. But again, you're applying to a course at university and they want you, you know, to do well. They want you to kind of succeed. And that's why these courses exist. So I think if you can articulate what your, I would say what your current career plans are, you know, saying something like, I want to do X, you know, and this course is going to get me, going to help me to get there because, you know, maybe it's a requirement for the job that you want to do. It's going to give you some knowledge, you know, for this. Maybe they've got great industry connections and things like that. We come back to that idea of having a placement. But again, something that you can really kind of articulate about your career plans and things like that, I would say definitely for your personal statement.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's really, really helpful. And I'm sure anyone listening who's wanted to apply, they will probably have to listen back to that a couple of times to like get like at main points. I was thinking, I touched on this a little bit yesterday around, I mean, I kind of mentioned it earlier, but within a field, so again, I'm going to use marketing.
Yeah.
And I mentioned this yesterday, there's like all different types of marketing. And if you end up in a place where you're in a certain sector and you feel like you're on one end of the sector, but you kind of want to be doing, so in this instance, the more kind of graphic design-y, like creative stuff, is it that point, you know, like, is it worth, how do you go about getting to the other point? Is it a master's that you should go and do, or further education, or maybe it's a diploma, or is it just a case of talking to those people and working out how they got there and then potentially having end up back in education to try and get up to that point?
Yeah, I think your last point, exactly right. You know, talk to the people that are already doing that job. You know, if you're already in that industry and, you know, you work with, you know, in this case, graphic designers and things like that, go and have a chat with them, talk about how they got started. And again, in the podcast we talked about, you know, the other day about getting a job, we talked about this idea of the hidden job market, right? Mm-hmm. You know, those jobs that aren't advertised. You know, if for instance, you know, you're quite creative on the side, you know, you're quite well trained in some of these platforms, you know, for the graphic kind of design, it might, you know, this conversation could potentially lead to another conversation, or they might say, oh, I've just seen this job that's advertised. You know what I mean? Like, you know, there might be kind of those conversations to have. I think that would be a great, you know, best case scenario type thing. But even if not, someone that works in the industry that can give you that kind of insight about how they got started, what the opportunities are and things like that, always worth having those conversations.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cause I was just, it has been going through my mind of kind of, I have a fear that lots of people will just think, I'm not where I want to be, back to education, this is the only route that I have to take.
Yeah.
And again, we talked a little bit about kind of like bad reasons to like go into masters. And I feel like that just might be one of them, or going into retraining when you don't actually need to. There are other routes. And I just...
Exactly. And I think, you know, as you said, talking to people is just going to give you a good idea, you know. If you know, if it's inside of your 18 months having left Reading, you know, you could still come back and use the Career Centre. There are other, you know, support mechanisms available and things like that. A lot of organisations will have their own training and development programmes and things like that. So there will be places that you can go and have, you know, similar kind of conversation, you know, to what we're kind of hinting towards here. I think, you know, you mentioned about, you know, how might your personal statement be different if you're kind of retraining, or your CV be different if you're retraining. I suppose it's having that conversation with yourself about, okay, where I am at the moment and what skills do I have? And we talked about the idea of transferability, didn't we? It's thinking about, what am I doing now that I would be doing in that job, you know, in that new kind of career, or that new job that I'm thinking about? Or is there anything outside of what I'm doing, you know, an online course in how to, you know, do some graphic design or whatever? That might be a really simple step to give you an idea about what it's going to be like, but also equally something that you then might be able to include on your CV or your personal statement or something like that. So I think the difference is you need to think about the kind of what you've achieved in your previous career and things like that, because there will definitely be some transferable things. You know, if it might be that you've led, you know, a team of people, might be you've worked with certain budget and things before, might be that you've developed some skills that you can still kind of transfer across. So, you know, I suppose it's that reflection activity, rather, as you said, just kind of racing away and saying, oh, you know, this must be the route. I suppose it's just taking a step back from that and just having that conversation with yourself and saying, okay, let's just stop, think about this for a minute. What are my options? You know, what have I done? What have I got going forward? Is there anyone that I could talk to? You know, and you gave the perfect example. You know, you may already be in touch with people that are doing that same job. And there's no one better to tell you exactly what to expect than someone that's doing that job at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I kind of joked earlier about if I decided I wanted to go and do nursing, yeah. I have absolutely no choice. But like, the more I've been thinking about it, the more I'm like, actually, you know, like, marketing is to do with people. It's about communication. Like, a lot of those skills are kind of fairly relevant. And actually, yesterday we talked about these kind of like anchors within jobs,
yeah.
And the career ladder and stuff, and that actually what anchors you and what's important to you and what's the reason behind it is actually kind of relevant in a lot of different fields, and you just mm-hmm. don't necessarily think about the connection.
Well, again, I just think of one off the top of my head. You know, within marketing, you've got to kind of understand and empathize with the audience that you're working with. Again, if you think about a nurse, that's exactly what they're going to be doing with their patients and things. So as I said, there's always ways that you can look at things and think about, actually, there are links, you know, between these. They might not be evident. You might have to explain them to other people, but there will always be links between what it is Definitely. That you're thinking about doing.
Definitely. And I asked this question yesterday, but I'll ask it to you as well, of is there a point where it's a bit too late? I thought I might know the answer, but because, you know, I think we all worry that, you know, you choose a degree and then that's going to be your job, and then that's going to be your job for the rest of your life, and that's all you're going to be able to do. And, you know, what happens if you get to the age of like 40 and you're like, I hate this. And I think that is, I've seen other people worry about it. But then again, I have seen, I have to say, 40-year-olds on undergraduate courses as well. So, but yeah, I'd love your opinion on that.
Yeah, so for anyone that can't see us when they listen back, I immediately shook my head when Rachel started talking. Yeah, I don't think it's ever too late. You know, if all of a sudden you're not enjoying what you're doing, whether you're 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100, or whatever it is, you know, you've got to do what you enjoy. I think, you know, for me, you've got to find out what it is that you like, what is it you enjoy, what is it that you're passionate about. And if at 60, you know, you get 40, at 40, 50, 60, whatever it is, if you're not enjoying what you do, you're not, you know, you don't want to get up on the Monday morning and go to work, it's time to change, you know. And I would say it's never too late, you know, to do that. We could talk about this a lot more, but that would be my general impression. It's never too late, and you've got to follow about what it is that you enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of like from this conversation that we picked up that there's so many routes to get there. Like, it's not just you have to go back and do an undergrad or go and do a master's, like, necessarily. You can find other ways to get there.
And I suppose, you know, one thing we haven't talked about, you know, is there are certain things, you know, that might be similar, you know, to one another. You know, so you might say, well, I really want to do this particular job. You go and look and you need a master's. Well, there might be something very similar, you know, to that kind of job. Maybe it's not exactly 100% the same, but there might be something very similar where you think, oh, actually, for that job, I don't need to do a master's. So, okay, I was, you know, if you're really committed to doing, you know, job A, if you like, that's the route you're going to go. But if you think, well, actually, I'd probably equally enjoy doing job B, and it's similar, but you don't need the qualification for that. Again, you know, there's always these conversations to have that I suppose if you just rush into things, you might miss some good things there along the way.
Absolutely, yeah. So I have my notes here that you recently went into kind of higher education. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I've actually recently done my postgraduate diploma in career guidance and development. So yes, after a few years after university, I won't say how many, I've gone back into higher education. So yeah, I've actually just recently completed it. So in January last month, I gave in my last assignment. Thank you. This was 2 years. So I did it part-time alongside, you know, my role that I'm doing here at Reading, and you know, a lot of probably evenings and weekends I was kind of studying. But you know, it meant that I was able to gain, you know, the professional qualification that's recognized in the field that I'm working in. I did it by distance learning. So, you know, a lot of the things that we've been talking about, you know, I've experienced. So I actually did mine at the University of the West of Scotland, so in a different country, if you like. But you know, I was having to do online lectures like a lot of the students are doing at the moment. There was lots of reading, you know, assignments to complete. And I think where I am at the moment, you know, currently deciding whether I want to do my, you know, dissertation and make it that full master's, you know, or actually whether I'm kind of satisfied where I am, I suppose. And as I said, it's not something that I did straight after university. And I think if I'd have now told myself after university, you know, if you can go back and speak to yourself at that moment in time, what I'd done, I don't think I'd have ever have thought about it, you know, where I was then. So sometimes I think, you don't have to rush into these decisions of taking a master's. You might want to go and try something, do something slightly differently, and then revisit it later on. That's the great thing, as we've said about a master's, you don't necessarily have to do it right after university. But I think, you know, now that I do look back, I studied English actually here at Reading. I'd kind of thought about a master's, you know, when I was just finishing my undergraduate degree. I also thought about working. You know, I ended up landing quite a good job here at the University of Reading in the summer. After I graduated, I was working with like research committees, helping students think about like their module selection and program selection and things like that. And you can kind of see, well, I was really interested in working with the students at that point. It then led me to working on, you know, like with some of the employability initiatives around the Redwood and Europe. And, you know, now I can see that kind of career progression, if you like, into the role that I'm currently in. But had you told me that when I was doing my undergraduate, I probably wouldn't have believed you. You know, so I think sometimes taking that bit of time out, you may then go back and revisit it later on. But yes, I've experienced some of these kind of things myself recently.
I really like that story, actually, and that it wasn't a completely linear path of kind of doing this and then that. It was kind of just happened to go that way, and then that's what you decided you
should
do.
I think, you know, if anyone asked me now, I was following what I enjoyed doing. You know, in that role, there were certain, you know, my first role, there were certainly things that I enjoyed. I thought, you know what, I really enjoy that kind of, you know, interaction with the students, supporting about what they enjoy. And, you know, I think that's, you can see there's a kind of clear path, you know, around that. So yeah, sometimes actually just stopping, trying something, following what you like, it might send you back into education and it might be unexpected.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming on. And just before we go, I've got one last question, which is kind of where can students go to find out more information about everything we've been talking about?
Yeah, to be honest, there's quite a few, you know, resources. Let me just kind of share some of the, you know, main ones, I suppose. There's a very aptly named site, which is just called Find a Masters, which is always a good starting point I like to use. And if you're thinking about PhD, you know, it has a sister site called Find a PhD. So, you know, we don't even have to share the links. People can find them really easily. You know, and I think if anyone is interested, you know, in having a look at this site, it pulls together a lot of the courses, you know, that we've talked about internationally. So not just UK, but kind of internationally. And it's a bit like, you know, Google search, you type in, you know, keywords and then it will return some of the courses. And I think it's nice that it's all in one place. Again, it also has some information about funding and scholarships and bursaries, you know, which really reflects our discussion. I think, again, if you're really seriously considering a master's, you know, or, you know, you're just kind of starting to think about it, come in and, you know, have a chat with us in careers. You can book a telephone appointment, you know, Teams meeting and talk about some of these options. As I said, you know, we can check your personal statement, give you some feedback before you apply, those kind of things. Again, if you're looking to get more information, I suppose, speak with people that have done it before. You know, there's lots of courses here at Reading. Even if you want to do something outside of your discipline, that discipline might be covered here at Reading. So see if you can be put in touch with, you know, a current master's student, or speak to the academics on your course. They might have a good insight, you know, in a particular area. So, you know, if that's something you're thinking about, those are the kind of things, you know, that I would be thinking about doing next.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on and kind of like telling us all about this. And I really hope it, with all these podcasts, I really hope that they really help students out. And yeah, thank you so much for giving your time.
No problem. As before, really enjoyable. And thanks so much for inviting me.
Thanks so much.